All right. Thank you all very much. Hey, who's had a great time tonight? Yeah, we can get this. Who's had a great time tonight? This has been really, really fun tonight. Certainly one of the best events we've ever done as a church. We have had a lot of people from our congregation pitch in and help with this. And you see just how much talent, how many gifts there are in this body that we can pull off something like this and it really, really go well. I'm not even going to try to name all the people involved because that's a long list of people, but I do think we should give them a round of applause and thank those who made this happen. I want you to know, I am not in costume tonight because you see me in costume every Sunday morning. You need to see me dressed like what, a normal peasant person, right? Actually, I think my costume is somewhere in the Amazon warehouse still. I just didn't get here in time. It'll probably show up like on Wednesday. We are celebrating 500 years of the Protestant Reformation. The Reformation turns 500 years old this Tuesday, to be exact. And what a 500 years it's been. It's been a glorious and wonderful 500 years in so many ways. Not without its problems, as I'll actually talk about this Sunday on All Saints Sunday. But it has been a glorious 500 years, and we need to say that, and we need to say that unapologetically, because we live in a day when it is very popular to blame the Reformation for everything that's wrong in the world. Really, because religion is blamed for everything that is wrong in the world. But I would actually say it's much closer to the truth to give the Reformation credit for everything that's gone right in the last 500 years. The Reformation has bequeathed to us incredible blessings, innumerable blessings, so many of which we take for granted. And in so many ways, those blessings have been cut off from their root. And when you cut the fruit off from the root, the fruit starts to die. And I'm afraid that is what we're starting to see happen. And so one of the questions I think we have to ask is, what would a new Reformation look like? What about the next 500 years? If God were to give his church a new Reformation, what might that look like? Or we can make it even more specific than that. If Martin Luther were able to come back from the grave and be with us today, if he could look at today's church and today's world, what might he say to us? What would he tell us to prepare us for the next 500 years? And I think that's a great question for us to consider. He would certainly be horrified at a lot of things in the church. I don't even want to imagine what kind of insults he might use, what kind of language he might use to describe things that have gone wrong in the church. I certainly think he would be incredibly frustrated with the way we have continued to divide from one another. This is one of Luther's greatest fears, a fear he expressed on his deathbed, that after his death there would be many divisions. He could see it starting to happen in his life, and of course it's continued to happen over the last 500 years. One of his greatest fears, the ongoing division of the church, has happened, very sadly. I think he would also be frustrated or horrified at the way that we have sometimes lost the radical graciousness of the gospel. The gospel he worked so hard to rediscover and re-present to the church has in many ways been lost to us. The radical graciousness of God's forgiveness, the transforming power of the gospel, these things don't have the same kind of punch that they did in Luther's day because we've taken them for granted in so many ways. I think he would also be appalled at what many churches in his name, claiming his legacy, many Protestant churches, have done with the liturgy and with the sacraments and with music. I think he would say, this is not what I intended. This is not what my Reformation was supposed to be about or what it was supposed to lead to. I think if Martin Luther were to pull back the lens and look even more widely at the culture, the world around us, he would be very horrified by things he sees there as well. Many of the things that horrify him in the world would be the same kinds of things that horrify us, and really, in a lot of ways, not all that different from the things that horrified him in the 16th century. Our culture is not that different from the kind of things that Martin Luther saw when he went to Rome. And actually, it's not all that different from things that were happening in late medieval Europe, where the family is undermined by sexual immorality. You have all kinds of corruption widespread in the culture. But think about this. If Luther, if I can borrow a phrase from Luther's namesake, Martin Luther King Jr., if Luther were to give a kind of I have a dream speech for the next half millennium, what would that look like? What would he say? If he was going to say, this is my dream for the next 500 years, what would he tell us to do? I think you can boil it down to this. I think Luther would tell us to embrace the joy of the gospel. A joy that is deep, a joy that is wide, a joy that is transformative. For all of Luther's struggles, and I talked a lot this morning about his struggles, his bouts with depression and his anguish and the inner turmoil that he was often under, the stresses and the burdens he had to carry. For all of that, Luther's life was still a life of joy, a life of profound joy, a life of fighting for joy, of trusting God for joy, of pursuing joy in the gospel. And I think Luther would tell us, seek joy and seek joy in the gospel. And in the gospel, you will find joy. You will find the joy you were made for. Don't look for your joy in technology. I think Luther would certainly be amazed at the kind of technology we have. If you think back 500 years, there's not a single area of life that hasn't been radically transformed by new technologies. But Luther would say, don't find your joy there. I think he would be amazed at our wealth, the incredible wealth we've created. But he would say, don't find your joy in wealth. He would tell us, don't find your joy in status or in safety or in security. He'd tell us to think of the line from his famous hymn we sung tonight, let goods and kindred go. There's something better than all of that. There's a higher and a deeper joy. There's a higher joy to be found in God himself in the gospel. See, this is what made the Reformation so revolutionary 500 years ago. Everywhere Luther's gospel went, it spread joy. Everywhere the gospel went, there was a new joy to be found. It unleashed joy everywhere. And that's what made the Reformation so attractive. That's why the Reformation set Europe on fire 500 years ago. That's why the Reformation was so incredibly powerful as an event, as it swept across Europe. It spread joy, and it was this joy that made the Reformation so attractive to people. It seemed too good to be true, too glad to be true, too joyous to be true. And yet it is true. And so we have to ask, if a Reformation is going to happen again, if the Reformation is going to be renewed, if the truth of God is going to sweep across our land the way that it swept across Europe 500 years ago, what's got to happen? We as God's people have got to recover the joy. Because the gospel takes us from despair to delight. Luther called the gospel the joyous exchange. That's how he liked to refer to the gospel. That in the gospel, Christ takes our sin and condemnation, and so we get his righteousness and life. Christ takes our plight upon himself, suffering what we deserve, so that we can step into his joy, so that we can step into his right standing with God and the new life that comes with it. And for Luther, this gospel of joy was to truly shape all of life. It was to seep down into everything. It was to be pushed out to the corners of life so that this joy covered everything and transformed everything. Luther once said this. This, I think, helps us understand how the gospel shaped all of life for Luther, what it means for this gospel to transform everything. He said this. He said, if God offers his gifts free of charge, why worry about our lack of worthiness? Why not accept his gifts with joy? See, stop worrying about your worthiness. God offers to you his gifts free of charge. Simply accept them with joy. Now, granted, this joy is not always easy. This joy is attractive. It's beautiful. We're drawn to it. But it's not always easy to have this joy, to possess this joy, to show this joy. Sometimes the problems we face steal our joy away. And the reality is there are problems in our lives. There are problems in each one of our lives that are bigger than we can solve. This is Sunday. It's a day of celebration and feasting and fellowship with God's people in God's presence. But Monday morning is coming. And in the course of this week, you're going to see problems that you just can't solve. You're going to face problems that are too big for you. And this is true not only of your life, it's even more true, I think, of our culture. Our culture faces problems that admit of no human solution. There is simply no solution to so many of the problems we face. And that can steal our joy away. That can make it easy to despair. But what we need in our lives, what our culture needs in the face of all of it, is good news of great joy. And that's what we find in Luther. That's what we find in Luther's God. That's what we find in the gospel Luther points us to. He points us to the Savior, the one who, when he was born, the angels sang out glad tidings of great joy. When it was time for him to die, Hebrews 12 says he went to the cross for the joy that was set before him. And when he rose from the dead on the third day, he met his disciples with exceedingly great joy. Joy penetrates the whole gospel. And when we embrace this gospel in faith, we can have a joy that is there even when we face problems we can't solve. It's a joy that overcomes our problems. So I say with Luther, I ask you with Luther, why not accept God's gifts with joy? Learning to do that will bring us a reformation for the next 500 years. Amen.